Beware, spoiler phobes, it may all be in your mind. This week on Storm of Spoilers, we return to a property they can legally call their superheroes mutants to discuss the ending of FX's Legion, which concluded today on FX. The astral plane is dangerous, so make sure you've seen all the episodes if you're spoiler-averse. If you have some special glasses that help you see what's real, that'd help too. Let's follow the man in the diving suit. It's podcast time. Hello and welcome to the Storm of Spoilers off-season tour. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and if I could pick any X-Men to be my parent, I believe I would have to go with Dazzler, because my parent would be like an amazingly weird music-based X-Men, and I feel like I could maybe have a reality TV show based on that.
I'm Joanna Robinson, and if I had to pick one X-Men to be my parent, I would pick Hank, a.k.a. the Beast, McCoy, because he's well-read, and he's played by Kelsey Grammer. What more could you want?
And I'm Neil Miller, and if I had to pick an X-Men to be my parent, I think it would be Gambit, Remy Etienne LeBeau.
Yes!
For several reasons. One, his power is kind of fun. Also, gambling is fun. And I would probably get one of those sweet Cajun accents, which would definitely help in the dating department.
Remy LeBeau.
Yep. So
you Remy want some gumbo share?
You didn't know how to give an impression, but I do have a Gambit impression.
You're constantly surprising us with your new impressions as we tour the various culture avenues.
None of them are good, but I have them.
People like them, though.
I think quantity, not quality, is a fine thing to apply to impressions, I feel. You're, of course, listening to Storm Spoilers, the podcast that used to be about Game of Thrones, but Game of Thrones is not on television right now, so we've been investigating other pop culture things. We've done your Harry Potters, we've already done some X-Men stuff, we're back to talk about Legion. I don't know why I just talked about Harry Potter and X-Men stuff, like those are the two things we talk about. Lots of stuff, guys, if you're new, check out the rest of the episodes on the feed, they're kind of evergreen. If you're new now and you haven't watched the entire run of FX's Legion, know that this one's going to assume that you've watched the season finale, which has aired the moment this episode drops in your podcast feed. So we are going to go all the way through the end. We're not going to have like a spoiler warning or divide the show just because that's the sort of show Legion ended up being. This is your warning. I've told you about the amazing other podcasts you could listen to before you catch up with Legion, or you could just strap in right now because we saw the finale of that, which we will discuss after the rest of our business. Joanna, we get reviews from iTunes, and Joanna reads them, which is usually where she reveals her new accent. Do we happen to get one this week?
We got a couple. I'm going to read this one because it's like a review / comment on our last episode. Or question, rather. So this was dropped on March 23rd by Pal Teth, I would say. 5 stars. Love you guys. You guys are awesome. I've been listening for years. 3 exclamation marks. I just wanted to ask you a question about your Iron Fist review. You felt that the main character, Danny Rand, should have been cast as an Asian or half Asian, but doesn't that defeat the purpose of the character? He was a white guy who can only achieve Kung Fu masterhood by going to a magical land. When the character was created, it was during the mid-70s when the Kung Fu movies were all the rage, which I love. So Marvel jumped on the train, but only through magical training could a non-Chinese attain super Kung Fu godhood, hence making him a superhero. Or am I being a dick for even asking this? I know you'll give me an honest answer, and this is, I signed his name, Manuel Antonio Ruiz from McAllen, Texas, born in Monterrey, Mexico. So,
you know what? That's a nice way to ask that question.
I think so,
we
too.
We were asked that question in a less nice way in the comment section of that post.
That's actually,
which I had to respond to.
Also, to his credit, a really interesting way to look at it, which I had not thought of before.
I agree.
It's like, because it's a magical thing, that's the only way like a, you know, white dude of privilege could become a Kung Fu master. I wish the show would have leaned into an idea like that. Like we talked about last week, where if they had kind of leaned further into the idea that Danny Rand like wasn't supposed to be the Iron Fist, or was shitty because he's, you know, not one of the native people who study these martial arts, then, you know, maybe there's some redeeming qualities there. But I think that's a really interesting point that I had not considered. So
I agree.
Thank you for bringing that up.
I think it sort of dovetails nicely into what Dave has been saying on this podcast and elsewhere, which is sort of like there's an implied story that Danny Rand kind of stole the Iron Fist power when he was in Kunlun, that like it should have gone to Davos or someone else, that Danny like went and sort of, you know, confronted this dragon and took a power that didn't really belong to him. And only that way could a white guy be better at kung fu than anyone else if he stole it. And I agree with Neil. Like, I think if they had leaned into that more explicitly in this reboot, because it's not the 70s anymore, if they leaned into that a little more explicitly, I think it could have been very interesting.
Worst Iron Fist in history, Danny Rand.
Basically, we're sticking to the line that they could have really leaned into a show about misplaced white privilege, but they just made a boring martial arts show instead, so...
If I have learned anything from interactions with listeners about Iron Fist, it's that the show had a lot of ways it could have been interesting, because it, like, a lot of people are coming up with ways it could have been more interesting just by like adding one character decision. So it really puzzles me that we ended up with what we did, because it seems easy. I don't know, from the outside, seems kind of easier to at least come up with something more exciting than Iron Fist.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could, of course, jump back in the feed, listen to that episode. This is your second Legion spoiler warning. But we still have another segment. Neil has a segment that used to be called, like, checking in with the Citadel of Crazy about Game of Thrones news. Then it was called, we talked about this already. Now he's expanding it into mini segments within his segment. So let's roll with the Neil Miller show.
Yeah. It's basically taking over the middle of every show. That's I'm like, I'm like that thing in Life, the movie that came out this weekend, where it
Calvin,
just
you're
grows,
like Calvin.
It grows,
or like a powerful mutant inside our head that just sort of like gets more powerful every year.
That is a much more relevant analogy. Anyway, so this segment still called We Talked About This Already. It has a sub-segment this week. A couple of things to remember. One, Con of Thrones. They just announced some new guests that I assume we're going to see there. Who did they announce this week? It was... There's two of them.
Kate Dickie, who plays Lysa Arryn, right. And the actor who plays Waymar Royce, whose name I can't remember. I apologize. So nice. Basically, the Vale is representing. But Vale. Let me tell you guys... There are some other really good people in the works, so stay tuned. Watch this spot, Con of Thrones.
Nice. So if you don't have your tickets already, I think they're sold out. Or, I don't know, check the website,
ConofThrones.com. They're not sold out,
so you can still get tickets.
That's fake news.
I don't want to do fake news for Con of Thrones. I'm super excited. I want to go.
Yeah.
Well, no, I am going. We'll be there, obviously. We're actually, the secret is that... We say that we're doing our show. We're going to do a Storm of Spoilers show, but you will see us in other programming, I have a feeling, because we're just personable, I guess.
And one of us is in charge of programming.
Yes,
so.
and all of us have offered to help. So it should be a lot of fun. It's going to be a really ruckus weekend. And yeah, come to Nashville. It'll be fun. Also, don't forget to take our survey, wondery.com/survey. Just keep taking the survey until we tell you to stop.
Are you a man? No? Take the survey, please.
Yes, take the survey so we can get you ads that are relevant to your experience. It seems to be working because we get cooler ads as we go along. So, rad. Game of Thrones news. There is some Game of Thrones news that we didn't get to talk about last week. There was two things. One, there's an interview on VanityFair.com with Ian Glenn, done by our own Joanna Robinson, which I'm told, I honestly haven't read it yet, I'll be honest. I'm told not a lot of...
Thanks, buddy.
...secret spilling. I tweeted it.
I boosted your signal.
Joanna can correct me because I'm probably wrong. Not a ton of secret spilling, but a delightful chat.
It was a really lovely chat. It's about his other show, Jack Taylor, which he has been working on actually before Game of Thrones even started. Like, that's how weird European television is, that he's done like 3 seasons of that show in the time that there's been like 7 seasons of Game of Thrones. He did talk about whether or not Jorah was ever going to get a new shirt, and actually what he said encouraged me. And
so he didn't just say yes.
or no.
Well, I mean, he implied that Jorah might get a change of clothing this year. That's how I'm choosing to read it. I don't want to spread fake Jorah news, but that's how I choose to read it.
Heaven forbid.
He also, as poor Dave and Neil already know, used the phrase difficult. I may have talked about this last week. He used the phrase difficult sexual pickles with me, which is just like one of the most delightful things that has ever been said to me about anything. So
yep,
go read that.
Read that.
Ian Glenn talking about sexual pickles, Jorah's shirt, and Jack Taylor.
The other big news was that it came out, somebody made a quote, and I'm struggling to find it, that the dragons are going to be the size of 747s in season 7. Yeah. This actually comes from one of the new directors, Matt Shackman, who says they're the size of airplanes, which is even bigger than they were last season. So in case you needed more dragon hype, there you go.
I feel like every season's dragon hype, but
right,
bigger dragon hype I could get behind.
We are, though, getting to the point as book readers where the dragons are starting to get as big as the sort of mythology of the dragons, which I think is really interesting, because it's like there are pictures in some of the illustrated stuff around the books that shows like a Targaryen standing up and being like one millionth the size of a dragon, like full on standing up and not even being as tall as the dragon's head.
Oh yeah, and there's descriptions in the books of the dragon's skulls and how enormous they are. So like, I think you're right. We're approaching sort of like what we would, we've only been seeing like teenage dragons, and now we're going to see like grown ass dragons. The other thing I want to say, I don't usually like to hype my own stuff. This is like tangentially Game of Thrones related, but it's very spoiler culture related, and it has to do with the Westworld panel that I saw when I was in Los Angeles for Paley Fest this last weekend, where the creators, Jonathan and Lisa Joy Nolan, were talking about sort of spoiler culture around their show. Lisa Joy Nolan brought up Game of Thrones and mentioned like the first couple seasons of Game of Thrones and how like the, book readers knowing what was coming didn't ruin their watching. Like, they basically had like a real chill, relax attitude towards spoilers. And I sort of compared and contrasted it to like Liam Cunningham recently calling people who pursue spoilers low lifers, or things that Maisie and Dan and David have said. Westworld obviously has had like a different, anyway, you can read the whole thing. There's nuance to it, but I just kind of, as three of us continue to wrestle with this idea of what's a spoiler, what's not a spoiler, what's a bridge too far. This really helps crystallize my ideas about spoiler culture in general, which is relevant.
Nice.
Show.
New Con of Thrones idea. Joanna just passed this back up the chain.
Okay.
They need to invite Liam Cunningham, and then we'll just do a 2-person panel with him and Dave, and they could just debate the merits of spoiler culture.
Spoiler culture? Sounds good.
And you and I can moderate.
No, you shut up.
I feel like that would be the most energetic or kinetic panel possible.
It'd either be that or just me like super nervous once like he actually rebuts my first argument and I'm like shit. Liam Cunningham just told me I was wrong and I didn't completely disagree. Shit.
Liam Cunningham just called me an asshole. I don't know what to do.
I kind of believe him.
I think something, I mean, I don't want to take too long in this, obviously, because we have a lot to get through, but like, I think one of the things that really became clear to me when I was talking to some of our listeners on Twitter about this is like, I have no problem with spoiler culture like this podcast or articles that any one of us might write, as long as there's an option for people who are online. So like all of us, I think, are pretty good about like, there's a big spoiler warning at the front of this podcast, or we put spoiler warnings at the top of our articles and we try not to write headlines that are like really dickish. And, I think that reading spoilers, listening to spoilers in that level does not necessarily ruin your experience. What does bother me are the other assholes who then take that information and then they just put it in their headline, and then you don't give someone online a choice about how they interact with their art. And that to me is shitty spoiler culture. So that's sort of where my line in the sand is, I guess.
Boom.
Well, that seems like a good place to put on yet another Legion spoiler warning, just to reinforce these things, that we are going to, after Neil finishes up his segment within a segment, be talking about FX's Legion, which has already aired all of its first season episodes. Neil, continue. Thank you very much.
Okay, cool. A couple of I have a fun thing, fun rapid fire thing. The first thing is, over at our friends Watchers on the Wall, I would say our preferred Game of Thrones fan site. They ran a poll this week, or they're currently running a poll, about where in Westeros would you most want to live? And obviously they list sort of the capitals of all of the different kingdoms of the realm. So I pose it to you, and I feel like I know these answers, but who knows? Maybe I'll be surprised. Where would you want to live in Westeros?
It's tricky because I know your answer and I don't want to like take your answer. So
do you know my answer? You never know.
Oh, maybe I don't. I will say Highgarden. I'll go live with the pampered rich people of Highgarden.
And the survey says Highgarden is number one in the Washington
Wall poll. Choice.
At 30% of the vote. So Dave, where are you going?
Oh man. Maybe it's the little finger niche in me, but I would like to hide in a post Lysa veil with little Robin doing fuck all to govern me, I'm sure. Then I'm just, you know, I'm behind that wall. There's some big guys there. My king's kind of an idiot, but as long as I stay behind that wall, I've got some knights and an awesome pass to like keep me safe from, you know, the other idiot realms.
Nice. That was actually number four on the Watchers on the Wall poll, polling at 5%. And my answer is the most obvious one, I guess, which is the Water Gardens of Dorne. Because of all the reasons why anyone would ever want to go to the Water Gardens of Dorne.
See, I do know your answer.
Which is polling 26%. It's number two in the Watchers on the Wall poll. So there you go. We actually got three of the top four. You know, obviously there's some good places in Westeros and there's some not so good places in Westeros. All right. So new game. It is called You Get One Thought. And we're going to run down three items of news from the last week. And basically you guys are going to give me one just quick thought to satisfy the desire of our listeners, which I know exists, to know what we think about pop culture things that are happening. So we will start with the Justice League trailer, which came out this past weekend and was very dark. So, Dave, we'll start with you. One thought on the Justice League trailer.
One thought on the Justice League trailer. They've obviously improved the color correction from the Comic-Con footage, but not in the direction that I wanted them to improve the color correction for Justice League. Is that...
yeah, that's one. It's a run-on, but it's one.
That's a very Dave answer.
Joanna?
I'm anxiously awaiting a fan edit that's just Wonder Woman in the flesh.
It would be the most colorful version. My one thought on the Justice League trailer is Bruce Wayne, kind of funny. Number two item on our list, the Spider-Man Homecoming trailer. We will start with Joanna, your one thought on Spider-Man's trailer.
Hey, did you know that Iron Man's in this movie?
This is the rumor. Dave.
That's my thought on all Spider-Man promotion. So that's why.
Dave, your one thought.
Oh man, now I'm like pressured to make it like witty. No, I'm not going to. I'm really surprised that Sony's gonna let Marvel Cinematic Universe take this win because it makes it look like they thought it could be a loss, and it looks really good.
Nice. My one thought on the Spider-Man Homecoming trailer is we have no idea who Zendaya is playing, but we know that she's a big Sylvia Plath fan. All right. Final item on the list, True Detective Season 3. It was announced that it is on the cusp of coming back and that David Milch, who did Deadwood, is going to be show running with Nick Pizzolatto?
They don't have an official title. He's involved somehow in helping guy Nick Pizzolatto's hand.
He's in charge of making sure that season two doesn't happen again. Here's my one thought on True Detective season three. It's that if they're going to bring in the Deadwood guy, just make it True Detective the Deadwood years.
My one thought is related, which is if David Milch is there, Timothy Oliphant better follow suit. So Timothy Oliphant and John Hawks, True Detective season three.
Nice. Dave, do you have, what do you
got? True Detective forever. Apparently it gets endless chances, and not only with me, but with HBO.
Yeah. HBO very quickly becoming the Netflix of not canceling things. If that makes sense.
That's the Ouroboros of not canceling, passing back and forth.
Yeah.
From HBO to Netflix.
All right. That is, surprisingly, all I have this week.
All right. We did talk about all those things already, except True Detective Season 3, but that was in the You Just Get One Thought subsection. So I see now why it was split up, just for, you know, indexing sake. Thank you, Neil.
Yep.
All right, guys, it's that time I've been warning you about. We're going to talk about Legion, the entire first season of FX's Legion, which is loosely in the X-Men universe, but also completely in the X-Men universe if you saw the last three episodes, which you should have, because we're going to jump right in. I'm going to throw to Joanna to this one first, because I know you are a Fargo fan, like I think we all are, but I know definitely you're a Fargo fan, and thereby a Noah Hawley fan by extension. And you very early on, and back in the Thought Bubble days, had high hopes for Legion while I was like, oh, X-Men TV series. Did it live up to your expectations?
Oh, you betcha. yeah, I think Noah Hawley's genius, as I've said here and elsewhere. and I think he's like the smartest person working in television. And my only concern is that he's trying to do too much. Like the turnaround on Fargo season three is real tight. So, that's my only concern about Noah Hawley, is that he's going to stretch himself too thin doing all these projects that he's committed to. That being said, I was a little worried about Legion when I started it, just that, like, not that I wouldn't like it because I liked it from the start, but that other people wouldn't get into it. And that proved a little true. I know a lot of people dropped off a couple episodes in. Either they didn't like it from the start because they feel like it's too much style over substance, or they were too confused, or whatever it was. And the show is sort of like intentionally disorienting for the first, I would say, 2/3. But it's a short season. And as much as I hate to tell people, like, oh, just wait till episode 5 and all becomes clear, because that's increasingly becoming the case, like, with the Netflix Marvel shows, and you're like, oh, round episode 7, they seem to kind of figure it out. I mean, like, who has 7 hours to waste to get there, right? But that being said, like, I went back and rewatched Legion after we got to sort of, like, some of the clearer plot points, and it was just immensely rewarding and satisfying. There are so many little details that if I get my business together, I will put into a post for VF.com. But there's so many little, like, rewarding details from a rewatch that not everyone likes to watch television that way. But I think a lot of our listeners do, to sort of pick through and find visual cues and little Easter eggs and all that sort of stuff. So the other thing I'll say to the style versus substance critique is I understand where people are coming from with that, but I really do feel like the performances from Dan Stevens and Rachel Keller, Aubrey Plaza is great, but that's like sort of its own gonzo bonkers thing. But the very human anchored and human emotion performances from Rachel Keller, who plays Syd Barrett, and Dan Stevens, who plays David Haller, is so good and so, I think, believably human to me that it anchors the show in a way that a lot of other comic book TV sort of struggles with. So, yeah, Legion season one, thumbs up all the way.
Yeah.
Neil.
Well, I think you nailed it, Joanna, when you said that it's a shorter, brisk season. I think we've talked about this several times with Marvel shows in particular, and this is not a Marvel, it's a Marvel imprint, but it's not a Marvel produced show like the Netflix shows are, so different teams working on these, but they sort of solved it by making it only 8 episodes, because it really is one of those, you get into the woods very quickly with this show. The first episode is so sort of brilliantly stylish and disorienting, but also sort of intoxicating. And then the second episode is just super weird. So by the time you're into like the third, fourth, and fifth episodes, you have enough of that intoxicating style to make you interested in what's going on. You get enough of sort of the human elements, like Joanna mentioned, the great performances from Dan Stevens, Rachel Heller, also, you know, the fun like side performances from like Gene Smart and Bill Irwin, and you start to pick up on these characters. Like, I didn't even realize that Carrie and Carrie were the same person until I think like the third episode.
Until I think you didn't the last time we podcast about this. Yeah. Right? Didn't we have like a debate about this?
Right. No. Like, I didn't really realize it. And so you know, it was really fascinating to sort of see this stuff unravel. And then the last two episodes are just hands down some of the most bonkerballs television I've seen in a long time. And I think that the thing that I was thinking episode 5, episode 6 was, this feels like it's going to be hard for them to pull it all together and land, because there's so much going on. There are so many different elements of whether or not David is crazy, and whether or not, you know, what are his powers really, and who, what are the intentions of all these people, and what even is Aubrey Plaza, and who's the demon guy. Like, none of that made any sense to me with like 2.5 episodes to go. But the way that they finish is so profoundly efficient and wild and sensical, I guess. It makes sense in the end. And it's brilliant. Like, it's flat out brilliant.
I'm right up there in the sense that there's no Holly television, not the two series that didn't get second seasons, but at least Fargo and Legion, which both have, they have this weird thing where they're structured in a perfect way where the decisions that I feel are the wrong decisions convince me they're the right decisions by the time the scene is over, which I feel like happened a lot to me in those last few episodes of Legion. I was really happy when, you know, Carrie starts talking to Sid, and it, you know, starts to basically backtrack, and she's like, no, I got it, I've been paying attention. And I'm like, yes, the series knows we're paying attention, because it really was like those first few episodes were such like tone poems with really nothing to anchor you into what was real and what wasn't, that it was sort of based on a trust. And so it was nice to see that it's really easy for, I guess, a show to try to trust its audience, but it's not normal to have a show like this assume that trust is going both ways throughout the entire run. So because of that, I think it's able to do some really daring stuff stylistically. And what's really exciting from a guy who likes superhero fiction is this is like the perfect way into an X-Men universe, where we've been discussing in the movies how they, you know, are sort of struggling to figure out what they want it to be. Is it continuity? Is it a metaphor for being this? Is it a metaphor for being that? You know, are we going to do sequels? Are we going to do whatnot? But the idea that both Logan and Legion, which we touched on earlier, and Legion managed to stick the landing, are able to find other avenues into these properties that world build in a way that they don't have to be X-Men stories, but the second you take away the X-Men part of it, it falls apart, is really just amazing in terms of a structure storytelling standpoint. So although I didn't know what I wanted by like the end of chapter 5 outside of more, even though I was sort of feeling a little weird in chapter 8 when David starts explaining everything to himself, by the time like everything came around, I felt like all the pieces from the first 5 chapters sort of refell into place, which is probably what Joanna's talking about with a rewatch, I'm going to need to do.
I was so frustrated that a lot of people who are complaining that the show was too confusing or too intentionally like, obtuse, were then irritated by the blackboard scene. And that really bothered me because I just felt like it was a really clever way to drop a crap ton of exposition, like very entertainingly, I thought. Like the whole double Dan Stevens, British Dan Stevens, the animation of it all. Like I thought that was a really clever way to handle, you know, something kind of challenging. And some people were like, oh, that's so lazy to just do a blackboard. I was like, I guess it is. Well,
It's definitely more clever than the way that you would normally do like an inside the mind thing. Like even this show, when they're trying to pull the Shadow King out, there's that like, he's like standing in a room that's clearly just surrounded by green screens. And they're just like flashing all these like memories and stuff. That's kind of hard to follow. The blackboard thing is very logically played out, and it, I don't know. I don't think it's wrong. I think I agree. It's not wrong for a show to hold your hand a little bit, especially when it's a show that spends like five episodes pushing you into the lake, basically.
Well, I mean, I guess, you know, some might argue wouldn't have to hold your hand if it didn't, or, you know, push you into lake in the first place. And I guess that's kind of true, but I don't know if it's just that I'm in the tank for Noah Hawley, but I don't resent it in the way that I resent like Mr. Robot. And, I don't feel like the rug was pulled out from under me. Like the reveal of Aubrey Plaza, if you go and rewatch the Aubrey Plaza stuff is really fascinating. Like, because basically what they did in the first couple episodes, right, is sort of put this question mark on Sid. Is Sid real? So you're like, that's what David keeps asking. Like, are you real? And so like, that's the question you're asking. And then you don't, it doesn't like necessarily occur to you to wonder if Lenny's real. Except to wonder how David's like friend that he did drugs with also wound up in the same mental facility as he did. Like that actually doesn't make any sense. But then if you rewatch certain scenes in that first episode in Clockworks, I mean, it's still a question mark to me actually whether there was a girl named Lenny, because, Rachel Keller's character talks to her one-on-one at one point. So like there is someone in that wall, like someone did die in that wall. But there are other scenes where the Lenny character is talking to David that like, maybe that's actually the monster sort of assuming, you see some clever tricks, like in the first episode, the therapist, Dr. Kissinger, right? Makes this gesture, that seems to be at Lenny to take off her headphones, and she takes off her headphones. But when you go back and rewatch it, it's really to the patient next to her who has his turtleneck up over his ears and he pulls his turtleneck down. And so like that Lenny is not really there. And that's the sort of like obsessive rewatch stuff that a lot of people roll their eyes over, but I find pretty fun. So, you know, your mileage may certainly vary when it comes to that.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting about it, what's interesting about Noah Hawley doing this is that it's a trust exercise. And I feel like Fargo, to a much different degree, is also a trust exercise, where they set up all these different characters, they set up sort of the motivations for these characters, and you just kind of know there's something inherent about the two seasons of Fargo that are kind of the thing they share with the movie is like, you just know that it's all going to go poorly at the end. Like it's shit's just going to get real, real quick. And it's going to maybe get very violent. So, but I think what they did with this is they create that same sense of sort of nervousness, sort of anxiety about what's happening, but in a way that sort of simulates the main character's problem, which is he is constantly disoriented with his world. Like he doesn't know who's real, what's real, where he is. And I think that it's really effective. And I think it rewards people who, like you and like me, and I would assume Dave, who are going to go back and watch it again all the way through. So like, it's going to reward those multiple viewings. We don't see that enough. Like we talked during the Game of Thrones season about, you know, we watch episodes multiple times, we find different details, but this is different. This is like learning a language. It's like trying to read a book in French, and then you go at the end, you learn the French, and you go back and read it again, and you like all of a sudden it's like the world opening up. It's like that GIF of Zach Galifianakis with the math. You know, the GIF that everybody uses for like confusion over math. It's from The Hangover, right? That scene where he's like, the math is on the screen. It's, you kind of have the moment at the end of watching Legion. So it's fun to like go back to the beginning and be like, all right, let me continue to unwrap this puzzle.
And it's fun for us. And I just want to concede in my like general artist subjective sort of way that I understand that that's not fun for everyone. And I understand that there are some people who just like watching TV for like a straightforward character and plot that they want to follow from beginning to end. There's nothing wrong with preferring TV that way. But for those of us who like these little details that I've seen a lot of people call the show overly precious or sort of up its own ass. And like, I understand where they're coming from, and it feeds something that I enjoy, which is like, as you guys know, like playing detective. So, for me, it's a perfect fit. And I think I sort of want to piggyback on what you said, Neil, about how the show very much wants to put you inside David's head, wants to disorient you the same way David's disoriented. And I don't think any of it would work if they hadn't cast Dan Stevens or, you know, someone up to the challenge that is being both enormously sympathetic and very scary, at the same time, like within seconds of each other's, which is like Dan Stevens' unique talent. If you watched him be like soft and cuddly on Downton Abbey and then in The Guest, where you're like, holy shit, this guy's gonna kill me. You know, like, you know that he has those two sides, and the fact that he could play them within the same scenes, is really amazing. And then, of course, you know, like I said before, we need to circle back and give Aubrey Plaza credit for just like sort of putting it all out there and just like trusting Noah Hawley that if she just does this like weird shit, it'll work out. And she did it, and in my opinion, it worked out. So
yeah, and also she's totally ruined the possibility of anyone ever playing Beetlejuice in a Beetlejuice reboot. Like, there's just no way. Like, it's either Michael Keaton has to come back or Aubrey Plaza has to do it. There's like, you can't watch the last two episodes of this show, of this season, and be like, oh yeah, I don't see it. Like, try it.
No,
come back at me. I'll fight you.
I'm going to be interested to see the interviews and stuff that come out with Aubrey Plaza after this finale, especially because, you know, it'd be interesting to see if she comes back next season. But also, like, she was like gender swapped as like a cast. So I kind of wonder like how much of that performance is like pure Aubrey Plaza, or like how much of it was just we were spared from seeing a fat white guy do all that stuff.
Well, I guess we could talk about I believe I read an interview where she improvised the dance montage, that she was just told to like do whatever she wanted, and that's what she did, which is amazing. I believe she is coming back for, since it's a Star Wars spoilers, I believe she is coming back for season two. She posted, like when they got the season two renewal, she posted an Instagram that sort of implied that she was coming back for season two. Which I found out before I watched the finale. So I was sort of like, okay, if Lenny slash the devil with the yellow eyes, slash Farouk like survives, what is going to be the end here? Like, is David our villain in season two? Does she just sort of like exist inside him in season two? Like, what are we going to do? And the idea of as the finale was sort of barreling towards its inevitable, like, final confrontation, I was like, oh, Rachel Keller, like, Sid's going to be the villain in season two. That's going to be really interesting. And then they made it Jermaine. And that's amazing. Like, freaking Jermaine Clement is the villain, in theory, of season two of Legion.
And he's being mind-controlled by Aubrey Plaza.
Exactly. And it's just like, please give us a bigger gift, Noah Hawley. Thank you so much for this. So
yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that journey. I did that same journey where I was like, all right, well, where's this thing going to go if they get it out of him?
Right.
And I was convinced that it was going to be Sid. Like, I was like, that would be the ultimate like bleak heartbreak emotional story for David. Also, though, you know, because I think I didn't know a ton about Legion from the comics, but in reading a lot of the stuff with Noah Hawley, he talks about this being sort of the deconstruction of a villain, and that Legion is, you know, could be, could at, at any point could be the villain of his own story. So I spent a lot of this season thinking that David, while he is very sympathetic and while you want him to find love and get help and have a normal life or whatever, I spent a lot of the season thinking he might become the villain at the end of this. Like, he might be the bad guy of the story, which is very interesting. Right. Which I think is the only thing about this that felt a little safe at the end, where it's like, oh, he's a good guy, which is fine. I mean, we all need heroes. But it did feel like they were setting up a really interesting, like, anti-hero story.
It might be a longer road towards him being the bad guy is what it might be. And, because Legion is an anti-hero or a villain, if you prefer, in the comics. And when I talked to Lauren Shuler Donner for, like, Logan and Legion and stuff like that, she said similar. She was like, you know, this is the making of a, is this the making of a villain, or will love save him? And then, like, in the end, you know, effectively love saved him, right? Because Cid is the one who saved him to a certain degree.
Kicked him awake.
Like, he's the princess. I think Cid being the villain would have been interesting. I was really worried it was going to be Lady Carrie, who, like, we should probably at some point talk about, you know, some criticisms. And I would say female Carrie is one of my critiques, because I just don't think that girl is a very good actress, nor do I even really like the balletic sort of action stuff that she does.
She's a fine actress, but I think they oversold how much she needed to react to things. That makes any sense.
That's bad acting, isn't it?
It's either bad acting or bad advice.
Maybe she's being poorly directed. But and then just the scenes where she, like, kicks real high and her hair flies around. Like, I feel like they're trying to go for, like, a River Tam thing, which is cool in theory, but I think not quite right. She just feels like a beat too slow in execution of it. And so it makes sense that, like, for the final action scene, it would be Carrie sort of, like, busting her way out with the devil inside of her. Like, that makes sense. But I was like, please don't let her get all the way out of the building with that thing in her, because I'm so disinterested in evil Carrie in season two. And then we have, I mean, I think that's another, like, tiny nitpick critique I would have in the finale is, like, I would prefer if Jermaine hadn't been like, Melanie, because as soon as he said that, I was like, okay, that dude's dead or something, you know, like, he remembers his wife, just before things go south for him. And if they hadn't had that moment, maybe it would have been a little, I don't know if I needed to be surprised.
Are you talking about like seven minutes, 3 minutes that you knew what was going
to
happen?
Yeah. I mean, maybe that's stupid of me to be like, I needed those 3 minutes of surprise, but, you know, like, it seemed like an unnecessary telegraph of that this character was not going to survive in that state the episode, you know.
Well, yes, I do think that it's interesting to have him be the ultimate vessel for the Shadow King, because he's been literally out of the world for years. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be interesting to see with, like, I wasn't super psyched about was that they put the Shadow King in another psychic. So, like, I'm not exactly sure if she's, like, in him or still on the astral plane and just able to, like, project through another psychic. I think the one thing I would have said would have been cool about Carrie is he would have seen Shadow King take on somebody else. The reason I thought it was going to be Cid is because the Shadow King does take over one of the new mutants who has the power to like, become or control another person, so I thought maybe they'd go in that direction. Didn't, but I am interested to see, like, this anachronistic Jermaine Clement trying to, you know, like, I don't know, not knowing about the internet, how long has he been out? So, and now all of a sudden he's got this Shadow King parasite on him. So I think that putting the two weirdest characters together and making them the villain is definitely the interesting part about that.
I have something social justice warrior-y to say.
Oh.
Positive about Legion.
All right.
I was struck by sort of there was an interesting, like, first of all, do we know what time period this is set in?
Intentionally not. Okay. No, Ollie intentionally made it like a combination of like older tech and new tech.
Yeah, because it's like, it's like the aesthetic of like, the bubble chairs of the 60s, but then somebody says something about email.
Yeah, no, Aubrey Plaza told me that when she went in for her costume fitting, like, she'd read all the script, but she went into the costume fitting and she's like, wait, what? When does this take place?
Right.
You know, and Katie Asselton's character especially is like, what, when are you? Katie Asselton, who plays David's sister, Amy. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
But
intentionally out of time.
Intentionally out of time, but also intentionally very sort of cool and diverse cast. I would like to say one nice thing about the girl who played Carrie. Two things, actually. One, her name is, in real life, is Amber Mid-Thunder, which I think is the most awesome last name you could possibly have. Also, she is a member of the Fort Peck Sioux tribe. She's a Native American actress, which I found to be fascinating in my research. So,
all right.
Maybe she needs to, you know, get better advice on set, but very cool. Also, I just thought it was interesting that it was, yeah, it was like this non-time based group of people. Just there was no social politics of it. It was just, and they really didn't even go too deep, it seemed, on like the mutant versus human stuff. Like, it was just like, there's an evil organization that wants this dude because he's powerful.
Or are they evil?
Who knows?
Yeah, they're so light on the world building, it could be either way. So, like, it feels really tightly constructed, but I know nothing about the real outside world because everything we saw of the outside world was through David. So I know that there's weird mutant camp that's been around for a while and has a vague purpose.
And an awesome coffee maker.
And Frozen Germaine, but I don't, like, outside of Clockworks, I don't think we saw a reoccurring exterior or, like, outside world place.
Amy's house, I guess, maybe? Like,
sort of.
Twice?
Well, he showed up there, but then, I guess she does say we should have let you live there, so we do know it's something.
I guess it's,
happened.
You know, for me, that's just, it's a super bold move to be that laser focused on location and style and character work that, again, I know we're like heaping just nothing but flowers on Noah Hawley right now, but those are brave choices when you're making a show.
I'll turn some critical lens on and say, like, I think it's pretty clear when you rewatch the pilot that he hadn't fully figured out what he wanted to do yet. And I think Lauren Shuler Donner said something similar to me, that, like, Noah Hawley delivered one idea and then just, like, really changed it at some point in production, like, delivered some idea into the David Holler thing and then, like, changed his idea. So I think in the pilot you're going to see some, like when they break out of Clockworks, there's a guy in like a barbershop, Reddit has called him, I think, like Barbershop Jacket Rockstander is like what they've nicknamed this mutant. And he's just like standing behind Melanie and he seems important. And like, maybe he's the guy who incinerated everyone in the pilot, cause we've never seen anyone else do. We don't know whose mutant power that was to incinerate everyone in the pilot breakout scene. So was it Barbershop Jacket Rockstander? Like, perhaps. There's also Rudy is his name, who's the telekinetic guy, who is in the pilot and then like comes back. It's like episode 7 that he comes back, right? For when they like go to Division 3. And I feel like him being away for 5 episodes was, I mean, for me who had watched the pilot like way long ago, I was like, who's this guy again? So, you know, that, I mean, maybe other people didn't have that issue, but I felt like him being such like, and then such like kind of like, he's the red shirt basically of that. Like, I think it's not the tightest storytelling to introduce him in the pilot and then red shirt him in like episode 6 or 7 and not give him anything to do in between time, really. When they're at the Melanie Bird retreat place, what is it called? Summerland. That's a little critique I would have of the season.
See, it's not all positive.
It's mostly positive. It's really mostly positive. Yeah.
I want to transition to talk about the ending and what happened.
Okay.
Because as we discovered in a group chat, not everybody has an alignment, and maybe we don't even actually have the capability of knowing. After the final scene of Aubrey Plaza driving away Jermaine Clement, after a bit of credits, We see David and Sid enjoying an evening at Summerland, and a little metal ball floats up to them, scans David. David gets sucked inside the ball, and he yells for help as the ball flies away off into the night. My reaction was like, what the fuck was that? That has no relation to anything that came before. But Joanna reminds me that the Division III guys actually said something about sending in something else. Remind us, Joanna.
Send in the, well, so like, you know, throughout, so presumably, oh shoot, I don't remember his name, but the interrogator character from season one who shows, or episode
Two-Face.
One. Two,
Hamish Linklater.
Hamish Linklater, who shows up with, like a melty face, and has a lovely husband and a kid, it seems.
Yeah, what an interesting, like, just sort of not relevant to the story. Thing.
But that's how this stuff should be done in the end, right? It's sort of like...
Yeah, no, it was a good time to stop and be like, and the rest of the world has to deal with the consequences.
Well, no, exactly. Like, I did you mean the fact that he's gay, Neil? Or did you mean the fact that
just
we spent
the fact
time,
that he,
like, watching...
they showed any, like, family or any backstory with such a delightful, like, diversion.
Yeah,
I mean,
feel
I love
like...
that it's like he's got a husband and they have an adopted black child. Like, that's great, but like, also it's just super strange to like do that diversion.
Well, I don't think it's strange. I think what it is like, if he had had a wife and a kid, you wouldn't have blinked twice. And that, not that like you're prejudiced in any way, of course you're not, but like, I mm-hmm. think we're used to when
you wouldn't
that
notice
happens,
it as much for sure.
Yeah, you would just be like, you'd be like, oh, it's interesting that Noah Hawley is like exactly what Dave says, showing the consequences of Dave. That's why you have to ask, is Division III actually the bad guys? Because they're probably the bad guys, but like, also it's good to show like the fact that this guy who interrogated David in the first episode, like, is a human with a family, and it matters. Like, those other people who got fully incinerated might also be humans with families. You know what I mean? And so like, it matters. The consequence of this mutant violence does matter. And so, to show him with his family is part of that, to the decision to make him gay and their child, like, you know, not white is, I think, the end game of diversity is like, don't mention it. Don't talk about it. Just do it. And there it is. The end. You know what I mean? And which is what you were talking about, I think, Neil, in terms of like,
yes.
The mutant cast at Summerland. But so Hamish Linklater's character clearly has a camera somewhere on him, so that Division III is like seeing what's going on as he's been captured by Summerland, and he's even talking to them. He's like, are you seeing what I'm seeing?
I like to think because, that the camera was in the tip of the cane.
Yeah, I like to think it was in the cane as well.
It wasn't in his eye, his dead eye.
It might have been in his dead eye, but I don't think they
I think they zoom in through the eye.
Oh, okay. Because Sid conveniently turns on the feed to what's happening to David so that like he could see it. Anyway, so that means Division III can see it. So the first thing they do is talk about basically bombing the place. They talk about sending in a peacemaker, and then he's like, no, I'm going to give your guy another hour to sort of get out. Like the leader of Division III is like, I'm going to give your guy another hour to get out of there or fix it or whatever. And then when they see the flash of the devil with the yellow eyes on the monitor, which is what Hamish Linklater sees, they say send in the Equinox. And so presumably, if you watch through the credits, that's what the ball was. We think. We don't know because there is no tech analog in Marvel lore to this ball that sucked David inside of it.
Yeah, and I have a question about this. So if they had this thing, why did they wait till the end after like most of their guys got killed to use it?
That's what makes me think it's not Division III.
Right.
Right, it might not be.
That doesn't make sense to me because Division III, they, you know, they may be evil, they may be nice, but they don't seem incompetent. At least not as incompetent as like generic military, evil military things. So I'm curious as to why they would wait all the way to the end to just use this super effective capturing device that just flies in there. It's like, you know, it's like, why would you fight a ground war if you have an awesome drone? So, interesting. That leads me to believe, that it's not them.
I mean, there was Matt Patch's friend of the show and I were chatting, and he immediately went to Mojo, the mutant from X-Men, who, you know, has like the camera island and universe that could be filmed because of like the camera scanning and whatnot. But I think that's just because Mojo kind of looks like the Shadow King in this series. I can't find like a ton of textual basis for it. I will say, if we're going to go out there into crazy fan theory land, which I did for a little bit today, I would love for this somehow to lead to Onslaught, which is the mutant created when Professor Xavier kills Magneto, and they sort of like fuse into a mental being. It's like this super angry alternate dimension killing psychic. I think that'd be an interesting third villain to throw in if the Shadow King's still going to be on the periphery, because I feel like they're going to orbit around those base levels of power, and I also feel like they had enough Professor X hints in this series that wasn't going to mention Professor X that they might be willing to go a bit further into other things that Professor X did or why Summerland is not X-Men. We might be living in another post-Professor X timeline.
Oh my god, I loved Dan Stevens doing like a quick Patrick Stewart impression. That was incredible. Yeah. Yeah, and a lot of people have been like wondering if Patrick Stewart was going to show up in the finale, or James McAvoy even, or whatever. And it's like, even though they said they, you know, the people at Fox said that that wasn't going to happen, people, you know, tend not to believe showrunners now. I wonder why.
our listeners know why.
I'm glad they didn't. I'm glad we got like an X wheel on a chair. And you know, clearly, well, I mean, that sketch on the chalkboard could have been Patrick Stewart, or could have been the animated Professor X, or the comic book Professor X. It's all just a bald guy in a sharp suit. But I hope we never see Professor X. And I actually hope Dave, you're so brilliant and you're usually right, but I hope you're wrong, and that like what we'll see going forward is more of this new universe that Holly, et cetera, are creating. I know that Farouk is a comic book villain. But
well, I think what he said in interviews this week is that they might use characters and places, but they're not going to use any straight up storylines. So the Shadow King being somewhat involved in Legion is probably the closest we're going to get to the show lining up with the comics. But it actually makes sense, because what we didn't see in this series is his powers getting split up over schizophrenic personalities, which I would have expected in the pitch of what a Legion show would be. It's like, oh, cool, we get to spend some time in these heads with these different people that have different powers. Instead, all the power kaleidoscope was faced outwardly, so I'm interested to see if it's even capable of doing certain Legion characters, because the character is so fundamentally different. He is like a young Professor X at this point, not necessarily the Legion or the David Haller that appeared in comics.
Yeah, but maybe season two is all about him having a schizophrenic breakdown.
You know, while stuck inside that sphere. The one thing I'll say is that I was really worried that this season was going to end with everything being inside David's head, or like, I was very worried about that. or like everyone at Summerland dying and then becoming personalities in David's head, because I think that that's in the comics, correct me if I'm wrong, David, that like someone that I just called you David, correct me if I'm wrong, Dave, like someone that David Haller has killed, a young woman, winds up being in his head. And so,
yeah, that was part of the New Warriors storyline I was talking about earlier, where Shadow King gets infected with somebody. But yeah,
right.
It could have been that easily.
So like, and that's sort of what the Lenny thing seemed like, right? Like Lenny dies and all of a sudden Lenny's in his head and it turns out to be something a little different. But I was like, well, what if we get like, what if Jean Smart, Rachel Keller, Bill Irwin, Lady Carrie, Memory Dude all wind up in David's head next season? And he can do all of their powers, you know, and that's a little bit more in line with the Legion comic book. And I'm glad it's not. I'm glad it's not that. So
far.
These are all things that I'm glad it's not so far. And I'm glad instead the solution is make Jemaine with Aubrey Plaza as his co-pilot. Oh, so good.
The solution is, what if Men in Black 3 had Aubrey Plaza? and the answer is genius from the villain side.
Is Jermaine the villain of Men in Black 3?
Oh, yes.
I've never seen that movie.
His eyes are mouths.
What? All right.
Yeah, no, you should at least check the opening minutes of, at least the opening minutes of Men in Black 3 to see Jermaine being the only person who realizes the type of movie he's in. But yeah, I don't okay, let's end this on a decisive note. One best thing from this season and one thing that you're really hoping for next season. Neil Miller, let's start with you.
I'm about to steal somebody's, but best thing has to be Aubrey Plaza. And the thing that I am looking forward to most in the next season is basically the inverse True Detective season 3 meme, which is Legion season 2. And it's just a picture of Aubrey Plaza and Jermaine Clement as this dual minded single physicality bad guy that I think is just wonderful, because there's so much comedy there with the fact that Oliver has not been in the world for a couple decades and Aubrey Plaza's Shadow King is crazy. So that's going to be super fun.
Yeah, I also love how they restyled her to be sort of like this mod 60s girl. And so they could kind of look like the Avengers, and I'm talking about the like Emma Peel Avengers, sort of like get this like kicky 60s, the two of them posing together as season 2 villains. It could be great.
Super fancy.
You do not steal mine, because I think Aubrey Plaza is a good call, but I gotta give it to Rachel Keller, because I already kind of knew what Aubrey Plaza did, something that I've never seen her do, but I knew that Aubrey Plaza was very special. I knew that Dan Stevens was very special. I did not know how special Rachel Keller is. And she was really good in Fargo season 2, but she had a much smaller part. And I just think that her emotional accessibility made the show land for me. In a way that it wouldn't have otherwise, because David's not a character you can latch onto because he's so changeable. And the same is true of Aubrey Plaza's character. And so it has to be Sid, who's this like steady through line, that I really loved. And then one thing I'm looking forward to, I guess I'll sort of double back to what I said before, which is that more creative new mutant world building that Noah Hawley and his staff can do, because like the whole Summerland thing is Clockworks, all of that's invented. That's so cool. You're making new Marvel stuff for us. Thank you for that. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
And I'm gonna say, for a thing that I admired about this series, they had two sequences and two separate episodes that did not have dialogue, either because they were completely silent or because it was doing a pastiche on silent film. But in terms of show not tell storytelling, those two sequences, I immediately stopped the episode before finishing the episode and watched just those sequences again, because that's so fucking hard and it was pulled off so beautifully. And then season 2, what I would really like to see is I would like David to adapt a personality. I think that sort of revealing that he has more power than he thinks he does was, I think, shunted to season 2. And so I want them to pick up on that. I don't believe the floating David, who's in for peace, actually knows what David Haller is capable of. And so I'm in for that.
Nice.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is Legion. Neil, where are we taking these fine folks next week?
Well, we're loading up the pun gun, and we're going into the Darkoness. We're doing... I'm going to have to explain this one, because that's super weird. We are doing a time travel episode around the re-release of Donnie Darko, the director's cut. But we're also going to talk just generally about time travel. We're going to probably touch on The Flash. We're going to dig into Dave's extraordinary knowledge about the Terminator franchise. And we'll...
I'm the last person who cares about the Terminator franchise as of next week's episode.
Not even James Cameron cares?
No.
No.
He's moved on to Avatar.
But I thought he was going to like take the franchise back when he could. Like I thought that's the rumor.
But that was before they just took it all off the schedule. So latest thing. Everything's off the schedule. Nobody's talking.
All right.
James Cameron's doing four Avatar movies.
Right.
Okay.
Which they might involve time travel, but that's not part of next week's episode for us. So we'll go wherever the time travel leads us. Who knows? They could be back in time. We'll talk time travel. And I am also going to watch Donnie Darko for the first time ever, which is something I am not ashamed to admit, because like that movie looks super weird. Who cares? But I'm going to watch it. And we're going to talk about it. It'll be great.
I have two words for you, Neil. Cellar door.
Okay.
We can talk about that next week.
Sweet. I have no idea what that means.
I know.
So while I'm trying to decide whether Mad World or some Huey Lewis in the news ends this episode, Joanna, where can people find more of your work on the internet?
Gotta go back in time. Find me at Joe Wrote This. You can find me on VanityFair.com. You can listen to me talk about both Big Little Lies this week and then sort of Ghost in the Shell and some whitewashing stuff on Gen Pop. You can hear me actually talk about whitewashing and Feud and my trip to the Dolby Theater where they have the Oscars on Little Gold Men. And that's about it.
Mr. Neil Miller.
You can get my stuff over at filmschoolrejects.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Rejects. While you're on Twitter, don't forget to follow our show at Storm of Spoilers. You can also get us on the Facebook. And if you're interested in hearing more of my voice, I am hosting shows on the One Perfect Pod channel, which is just a podcast you subscribe to, and it has a bunch of different shows. We've actually done two emergency pods this week to break down the Justice League and Spider-Man trailers, and for my sanity, we're not going to do that many every week, but this week, you know, special. So follow me on over there.
So many podcasts.
Seriously.
I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can follow me on Twitter at DA70. I unfortunately is not going to help. I guess it on two podcasts this week. I'm on the You Nerd It Here First weekly podcast discussing visual effects and how they sort of relate to us culturally. It ended up being a cooler discussion than I prepped for, which means I probably said something stupid. Let me know what it was when you listen. And then I was also on the Elle Fanboys podcast talking everything Spider-Man Homecoming trailer, what I've heard about Sony business practices, and how the Damage Control television series met its fate and ended up in Spider-Man Homecoming. So check those out. And then, you know, other podcasts, fightinginthewarroom.com or lastpagesofgreatbooks.com. You know where it is. So until next week, let's figure out if it's Huey Lewis in the News or Mad World right now on Storm of Spoilers.
Stay.